Okay, good evening, folks. And today is Saturday. Well, it's actually the afternoon. Saturday, April the 7th, 2007. And we're on spyman.ca on our show Exposed. Now, we're very, very honored and quite delighted to have on a very special guest. His name is retired Captain Field McConnell, and he's been retired now for just a little while, but he was 28 years as a pilot for United Airlines. Is that correct?
No, it's not. It was Northwest Airlines.
But oh, Northwest Airlines. Sorry.
No, that's okay.
Okay, I didn't get I just got the information so quickly I couldn't retain it in my brain that fast. Well, we're very honored to have you on, so welcome, Field McConnell.
Well, it's my pleasure to be on, and I want to speak also for my academic partner, David Hawkins at Hawk's Cafe. He very much enjoyed his interview or two, if you did two, I can't recall, but he spoke very highly of both of you as interviewers.
Thank you very much. Now, we're trying to get down to the bottom of a lot of the things that happened at 9/11, and that's why I got myself involved, because of the incident that happened to me. There's
okay.
A lot of corruption, and that's what I wanted to get into. Now, what exactly happened to you, this is what I want to get into, that you were forced to retire? You're basically retired, but you didn't really want to, correct?
No, I was forced into retirement, and the way that happened, and I'm not alone, I'm not the only one who's ever been forced to retire from an airline company, but on December 6th of 2006, I started getting a whole lot of unsolicited information regarding 9/11, and I compounded that on the information I already had. I've been interested in 9/11 since the very day it started, and just to be perfectly clear, my interest is spawned by the fact that American 77, which is the airplane that, according to the media, struck the Pentagon, that was flown by a college classmate of mine, Captain Chick Burlingame, and that was American Flight 77. So not only did I have a college classmate allegedly die at the hands of the terrorist, which is a falsehood, but also my former Air National Guard unit, I retired from the North Dakota Air National Guard, and they responded to the events of 9/11 in scrambling off Langley Air Force Base, Virginia. Three F-16s from the North Dakota Guard were there, and they all got airborne, and they responded. But unfortunately, their response was corrupted, and that's my choice of words. However, I'm looking right now at my house. I am looking at the U.S. Air Force and Canadian Air Force plans for the dress rehearsal of 9/11. And the name of that military exercise was Amalgam Virgo 01. So I had a pretty good background of interest and information regarding 9/11, but starting on December 6th, it was as if a fire hose of credible information came my way, and I was obligated ethically, morally, and legally to share this information with offices of authority, not only an airline company, but the Airline Pilots Association, which is the union for which a majority of the U.S. airline pilots and Canadian airline pilots as well fly under the umbrella of ALPA, Airline Pilots Association. So I shared this information as it developed, and I determined that it was reliable and lethal. I shared the information with a couple of government organizations and one airline company and the union. And that was December 10th that I communicated, and I've never gotten a response from anyone. And so I guess I would suggest to you that means that they're not going to respond, because the threat that has been out there for a number of years now is that Boeing aircraft can be electronically commandeered. And if you want to believe a benign purpose, the benign purpose would be they can be commandeered to be brought in for a safe landing at any of 108 different Air Force installations around the globe. If you want to consider a non-benign application of that technology just replay the video from 9/11, because what you saw flying into the World Trade Center was not an airliner. It was a droned 767 platform. And when I say droned, I mean there was no crew, no Muslim hijackers, no airline employees, and no passengers on that airplane. That's but the just to stimulate any viewers who might be online, if they can find the blueprint I'm looking at, and they probably would find it by Googling Amalgam, A-M-A-L-G-A-M, Amalgam Virgo, V-I-R, V as in victory, I-R-G-O, Amalgam Virgo 01. And that was, in fact, the dress rehearsal for 9/11. And on page one of the 35-page document, there's a photo of Osama bin Laden. And I think they're just trying to, 3 months before the events of 9/11, they're trying to pre-suggest to anybody who has eyes that the perceived threat of this type of a hijacking, and I'll go step by step through the military exercise script if you wish, but suffice it to say, the very obvious visual suggestion is that Osama bin Laden was the threat, that Washington, D.C., and New York City were the targets, and that the Canadians and the Americans were working together to defend those high-value targets. And that's a nice idea, but that's not what happened. And 9/11 was totally corrupted, and it was really, I believe, and I'm betting my life on this, a double cross. First, the Canadian intelligence people that picked up on the Al-Qaeda plan, rather than report that Al-Qaeda plan to someone to stifle it, they actually piggybacked on it, and they actually, meaning when I say they, I'm suggesting that Canadian intelligence was the first to detect this plan. Who they may have shared that with is unknown to me, but the results are known to the world. And the results are that the Al-Qaeda plan, which was Trojan-horsed, piggybacked, or double-crossed, turned into the events of 9/11, which have been laid at the feet of the Muslims, which is unfair. And it has caused our adventures in Iraq, which are really unfair, both to the Iraqis and to the U.S. and coalition servicemen. And I think it's way past time that 9/11 gets understood. And to that end, by the way, David Hawkins and I are working probably 18 hours a day apiece, taking in information from an ever-growing swarm of helpers at Hawks Cafe. And what I mean by ever-growing, just today we've had contact from a man who was a federal prisoner in the Arkansas state prison system, and he had some very interesting information to share with us. And what we see here in 9/11, if you want to characterize it as an abject failure of some entity, my personal opinion, and I'm not speaking for David, but as an American, I think 9/11 demonstrates the abject failure of the intelligence services of the United States of America.
So this could be something that might have been a long time in the planning as well, and there could be a lot of people that were in certain strategic positions to thwart all kinds of intelligence, so that this could be staged. But by the looks of it, because it was so massive, this could have been a long time in the planning.
Well, let me tell you at least how long it was. There's an operation that you can find the blueprint for on the Internet. It's declassified. It was an operation called Operation Northwood or Northwoods. But if you web search,
yes.
Are you familiar with that?
Yes, I am.
Well, Agent Ladybug, why don't you tell me then what that put in your mind? I know what it put in my mind.
Well, it was something that was hatched way back when.
And yeah, about 1961.
1961, and they didn't actually follow through on it, and this was perfect timing for them to have gotten through with it. With this idea, the Operation Northwoods was to hijack planes and to do a major attack against the United States using this as a ways and means to start another war. It's just the same as Pearl Harbor was staged. If people look in the history, they've done this over and over again. It's a kind of repeat performance, I call it.
Well, there's another word for it, Ladybug, and that is false flag terrorism.
Yes.
Yeah, and that's what we're seeing here. And fortunately for the three of us on this interview right now, as well as legitimate and honest citizens of both Canada and the United States, there's more of us good people than there are of the bad people. And the bad people have become so brazen, they signal what they're going to do in advance to those of us who have the vision and the filters through which to observe what they're doing. And this plan I have in front of me, in fact, are either one of you, Eric or Agent Ladybug, are either one of you online right now with a computer?
Not myself, but Eric might be.
Eric, are you near a computer? I think we lost Eric. That's okay. I will email you this link later, and you can put it out however you wish to do that. But
we'll put your link and David Hawkins' link on Spyman. This show will be aired tomorrow night at 10 o'clock Eastern time, because
oh,
that's
great.
When Spyman will put it on. Usually we do it live, but if they know that we're doing the program, what's happened is Bell Canada has actually put a timer and they thwart our program. They actually can take it right off the air. So this is why we're posting the shows now, because we have this problem time and time again. Right at the time when we're trying to do a live interview with somebody very outspoken or the information is hot, they don't want that information leaked. So this is why we post the show now.
Yeah, it's like a giant chess game.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I don't want to what part of Canada are you from, Lady?
Toronto.
Okay.
Toronto, Canada.
Yeah, I've spent a lot of time there in my airline career, but it seems to me that the corrupting of the United States intelligence services has been done by effectively two major players. One of those major players would be Canadian intelligence and Canadian industry, but surprisingly enough, the other major player was insiders of the United States government, people in high bureaucratic positions, and many, many of those people seem to be put in those positions during the period 1993 through 2001. So if you know which administration was in office in the U.S., you can start to connect some of these dots for who has been trying to bring down the United States of America. But when I say bring down the United States of America, I'm going to forward now. There's 35 pages on this blueprint for the attack on 9/11. And I'm going to go to page 34, and your listeners will have a link tomorrow so they'll know how to look at this. And then when they go to this link, they can look at page 34. And there's a map that the planners of Amalgam Virgo, which was the military exercise on June 1st and 2nd of 01, where the threats, the tactics, and the responses to tactics were dressed, rehearsed, that's my choice of words, at Tyndall Air Force Base in Florida. And on page 34 of the 35-page document, it shows four military organizations, which are basically air defense sectors, one in Alaska, one in Canada, one in the western U.S., and one in the northeastern U.S. And those air defense sectors were told in this 35-page briefing, which, by the way, is in full color and very attractive. But it also it tells people that have the ability to interpret this information some interesting things. For instance, I'm looking at the ground track of the alleged airliner that's going to be hijacked and flown into the U.S. Capitol. And that's not my imagination, and you don't even have to trust me. You can see the U.S. Air Force document as you're listening to this interview. You can go online to the linked URL, and you can follow these dots. There's red dots that come through Alaska, through the Yukon, down through British Columbia, and then they make a left 90-degree turn, and they head directly for the Capitol. And I find it very interesting as a career pilot that, first of all, most pilots or most airline companies would prefer to fly a straight line. In other words, if they were going to leave Alaska and go to Washington, D.C., simply in the from the vantage point of efficiency and the almighty dollar and spending less gas or creating less global warming, however you want to look at it, a direct route is always the cheapest, most efficient, and fastest route. But this route for the alleged hijack airplane makes a 90-degree correction right over what appears to be Abbotsford, British Columbia, And Abbotsford, British Columbia is the location of an airplane modification facility that has been linked conversationally with some illegally modified Boeing airplanes. And the illegally modified Boeing airplanes, Ladybug, I don't know if David Hawkins told you, but I filed a lawsuit against Boeing. Are you aware of that?
I heard that first on Coast to Coast when you were speaking with Ian Punnett, so that's the first time I heard. But explain exactly what transpired with this lawsuit. Yes, this is very interesting.
Well, I filed the lawsuit just myself, Field McConnell, against Boeing, which is the Boeing Aircraft Company, and ALPA, the Airline Pilots Association, because after 2.5 months of trying to get somebody in authority to address a single issue, and that issue is very focused, very lethal. It's QRS, and let me do that phonetically, Quebec Q, Romeo R, Sierra S, QRS 1111 gyro chip. And that's not a generic name, that's a brand name. So it starts with a capital G, then Golf, capital G, Golf, Yankee, Romeo, Oscar, G-Y-R-O, then a capital C as in Charlie, Charlie, Hotel, India, Papa, gyro chip. And that gyro chip, the QRS-11, is military technology that was designed by BEI Corporation in Little Rock, California. I believe they were built by BEI Corporation in Concord, California, which is in the vicinity of San Francisco, but they were not designed to be installed in commercial airliners or private airplanes for that matter. They were designed to go into Maverick missiles, which is a Raytheon-produced military missile. The significance, from my perspective as a person who's been involved with the military and the airlines for 35-plus years, the only thing logically that crossed my mind is the advantage in having missile technology in an airplane is it might help guide the airplane temporarily if the airplane was to accelerate extremely quickly to missile-like speeds, which those speeds could not be maintained. The airplane would come apart. But I want to suggest that your viewers write this down and Google it after the interview. ADAM, A-D-A-M, AIR, A-I-R. They should Google ADAM AIR 574. And they will find that on the 1st of January of 07, ADAM AIR Flight 574 was vaporized in Indonesia very closely to the suggestion that I gave the legitimate authorities on December 10th. In other words, 3 weeks after I warned, and when I say warned, that's exactly what I intended to transmit to these agencies, is there's a huge threat out there. And what I mean by huge, Ladybug, that's a rather vague term. But it's our understanding at Hawks Cafe that there may be as many as 108 airplanes still illegally modified with these QRS-11 gyro chips. And whether that is the case or not, the FBI and Boeing Aircraft have also failed to respond to me when I send them certified letters or signature required type letters. I haven't heard from any of these people who ostensibly should be interested in the safety of the traveling public. And so that brings us back not only to my lawsuit that I filed because I was ethically, morally, and contractually required to object to unsafe practices on airplanes if it becomes my knowledge. And I'm saying that because the vast majority, perhaps 99% plus, of the pilots in Canada and the U.S. simply have no academic knowledge of the QRS-11 gyro chip. And if it is installed, if it ever has been installed, or where the installations took place. But unfortunately for me and my family, I was aware of that information. I'm obligated to communicate that information to people in authority, and the response was that I was pressured to retire early from a job that I've held for 28.5 years. And that's not, that is not crying in my soup. I'm not concerned at all. I know I did the right thing, and I know that things will work out well. But my point is this, that if I'm obligated to fly an airplane that has 403 passengers and I can't be 100% certain that the airplane's safe, I think I serve the traveling public to a great higher standard by blowing the whistle on this allegedly corruptly installed QRS-11 gyro chip. And I find it rather interesting that neither the Boeing manufacturer, the Union, Alpha, nor the FBI has responded. And I certainly hope that no more QRS-11 driven airplanes get vaporized. And I think by shedding light on this through interviews such as your own, through Coast to Coast, through Alex Jones, I think this does make the future use of the QRS in a vaporizing mode very, very much less likely, because as you know, probably David Hawkins and I have pretty much named names of offices that are knowledgeable of this. And so, the people that might be behind this technology and the deployment and the triggering of this technology, they've pretty much been identified from A to Z. And, I would like to hope that the threat of another aircraft being electronically hijacked and then intentionally lost is as close to zero as can be. But that's my hope. That's not a fact. And I won't rest until the facts are publicly released.
So this is maybe a serious problem in the manufacture of a lot of planes. They might have installed this unbeknownst to the pilots. And this might be a factor in as well in cruise ships. Any kind of travel mode that the public might use, they might have installed all kinds of various paraphernalia. So this is rather interesting that pilots are not versed in what is actually on the plane, and you just chanced upon this, correct?
Yes, this information came to me unsolicited, and it came through a man who is retired from another one of the major airlines, and I was trying to encourage him to keep fighting the battle he's fighting. And in encouraging him, I told him that I have a great interest in 9/11, and it was this unnamed gentleman who put me in touch with David Hawkins, and David Hawkins and myself are completely different animals. He is a Cambridge scholar. He's widely respected by about six different academic disciplines. I might also say he's widely envied by a whole lot of people who would consider themselves academics or elitist. Because David Hawkins, even though he's a brilliant, brilliant scholar, he's a humble person who simply wants to serve his fellow, and he believes, equal citizens in both of our countries and, you know, the rest of the world. And so David Hawkins is applying his superior intellect to resolving this, and I don't bring much to the table, but one thing I've been helpful with David and Hawks Cafe, and by the way, Hawks Cafe has over 700 members, I believe, and it's growing every day, and currently listed on the internet, if you were to search for counterintelligence web groups, I believe that Hawks Cafe is number 3 in North America. And I would anticipate that number 1 and number 2 should get pretty nervous, because we've got people all over the place sending us verifiable evidence of things such as the all sorts of angles regarding 9/11. For instance, we had an over-the-road trucker, a lady whose name, even if I could remember it right now, I wouldn't share, might cost her job. But she got a hold of Hawks Cafe via email and then later called both David and myself, and she pointed out that she and her big rig over-the-road type truck had been at JFK Airport in June of 2001, and not only was she very specific in her recall of the Muslim people she dealt with there, but she had the bill of lading for the load that she carried in or out of JFK. And it's this type of networking and this type of intelligence gathering that has David and I wondering if we can do this type of stuff just as private citizens who have never met and we're 1,200 miles apart. What have the federal intelligence services of both Canada and the U.S. been doing with our collective tax dollars for the last 5.5 years? And just to tighten that line of logic up a little bit, David and I have been working collectively on this project only for 4 months. And yet I can sit here and rattle off the details. I'm looking at the blueprint for 9/11. I can tell you that on the Air Force document, and this is not something that David made up and put Air Force on. It's not something that I created. This is an Air Force briefing for a military exercise, and it clearly shows the hijacked airplane's destination is the U.S. Capitol. And as you know, the U.S. Capitol was evacuated but was not hit on 9/11, and that was, I would characterize this as an act of God. Had the U.S. Capitol been hit by United 93, which went down in an 8-mile debris field in Shanksville to New Baltimore, Pennsylvania, had the Capitol been hit, it was in session, so many of the 535 members of Congress may have been lost. The rest would be traumatized, and the 100 senators would have a similar fate. And there are people that use the term decapitate America, and I'm one of those people. I think the intent of 9/11 was to decapitate America. I know for certain that, just very briefly, the command of the U.S. Navy was under Canada Steamship Line, or whatever the name of that corporation is up there that you have in Canada. I think it is Canada Steamship. Yeah, they're a multi-use. They're a civilian steamship that can be converted into military use fairly quickly. And so when the Pentagon, Wedge 1, where Captain Gerald Taconto was the duty officer for the entire U.S. Navy Command Center, when that flying object came through his window, and the flying object was not American 77 or Chick Burlingame, but whatever it was, it killed Taconto, and the transfer of the U.S. Navy just briefly, and I mean probably a singular minute, transferred up to Canada. But strangely enough, on 9/11 of 01, the forces of NORAD, which is North American Air Defense, which is part of the broader Northern Command, on 9/11 there was a 2-star Canadian general in charge of NORAD. And the NORAD Command Center, as most of your listeners know, is in Cheyenne Mountain, Colorado, which is just outside Peterson Air Force Base in Colorado Springs. And I'm not reading anything sinister into that, that there was a Canadian general in charge that day. On the other hand, I'm not saying that that couldn't have been intentional. And what would have happened had the Capitol been taken out is, in fact, it did happen, but it was very brief. For about a minute or singular minutes, the Navy and the Air Force assets, first responders of the United States, were under the control of Canadian authorities. But once again, that was very, very brief period. Had they also been successful in taking out the Capitol, you would have lost the chain of command of the United States of America, because, as I recall, Vice President Cheney, his whereabouts were not really determined for a couple of minutes after the attack. We do know that the President of the United States was down at a school in Sarasota, Florida. I think he was reading the school children a story about a goat.
That's right, the old goat story.
Well, you know, that's funny.
America's under attack. This is what I see on CNN. I thought it was Hollywood in its latest production.
Yeah.
But I thought, how quick were they to respond, CNN, to the fact that it was America under attack, unbeknownst to them, whether it was a drunk airline pilot just happened to hit the towers. I just thought that was too quick to the draw, that CNN already had it in graphics red, those words, America under attack. So that's what I found rather strange, because I'm a graphic designer, and I thought, boy, do they know their story, but the president doesn't. He's reading a goat story.
Well, you know, as long as you're a graphic designer, this will stimulate you. On the day after 9/11, there were three pictures on the front page of the Fargo, North Dakota newspaper. One was George Bush, one was Osama bin Laden, and one was me, because the Fargo newspaper, one of the editors correctly remembered that I had flown for both the North Dakota Air National Guard, F-4s and F-16s, and also that I worked for a major airline company. So when the Fargo paper called me about 1 p.m. on 9/11 and asked me for my opinion, I gave them my opinion, which they turned into a front page story. But alongside of my front page story, which was not earth shattering, but I can forward it to you via email later, there was a picture, and it was the rubble of the World Trade Center, some steel and some ash and some smoke and some weary looking firemen. And what it said, the headline, I'll remember it forever, it said, Our nation saw evil. In other words, our O-U-R nation, N-A-T-I-O-N, saw S-A-W, evil, E-V-I-L. Well, I find it more likely after studying this for 5.5 years that our nation was W-A-S, not S-A-W, was evil. That some people in positions of authority in this country conspired to attack the United States of America from within, and not single-handedly. They had a whole lot of help from people in Quebec. I'm not putting that on Canada, but the people in Quebec, there's several industries there, which some intelligence industries, some airline-type software and hardware industries. But the people that brought you 9/11, when they're identified publicly, I think will be a group called Francophonie, I believe, the French-speaking world. Does that sound right?
That's right, Francophone.
Francophiles?
Francophone, that's what they use the term, Francophone.
Yeah, Francophone. And I include in that, I'm not putting that on France and Quebec. Also, the corrupted Americans, and I know, and I'm not being secretive or playing cat and mouse, I'm just trying to keep my head attached to my shoulders temporarily. But this will all come out, and it'll come out sooner rather than later. There's great demand down here in the U.S., and I presume in Canada also. Rosie O'Donnell, whether by design or by default, has done a great thing for 9/11 truth, and that is she raised this issue in front of a bunch of ladies on a ladies' TV show, and because so oftentimes people that are busy trying to keep their head above water financially, trying to raise a family of one or two kids on four incomes, simply don't have time to become interested in these types of things. This is 5.5 years old, so that's the bad news for the traveling public, is, you know, a lot of people don't have the time or the interest, and they think that the trail has grown cold, just like your murder problem up there. And I almost slipped and said the man's name, but I believe you have a childhood friend that's got a colorful history. But this trail has not grown cold on 9/11, and I'm looking at the Air Force plan that was the blueprint for the dress rehearsal of 9/11, and it's amalgam Virgo, and the dates are June 1st and 2nd of 01. And once you see this plan and put that together with what you've already seen, Lady Agent Bug, and that is the Operation Northwoods, you can see that somebody in our government someplace must have dusted off Operation Northwood, got a whole bunch of help from people around the world, including people in France. And I will be specific with one of the French companies. David probably told you about the French banks and financial institutions, but he certainly would have mentioned AXA, A-X-A, which is the world's biggest insurance company.
Yes, he did mention that.
Yes, and that's significant because it's a French company, and I find that the Americans that brought you 9/11 are French sympathizers, and correct me if I misspeak because I'm not a geopolitical expert, but aren't a lot of the French sympathizers in Canada in Quebec?
Yes, and they actually... They're sort of remote on their own turf. I think there's a long-standing agenda that they have because the French and English-speaking had a war amongst each other, and the fact that the English-speaking overtook Canada, this is something that I think is long-standing, that the French do not want to attribute that Canada is mostly English speaking. That's why in Quebec, all the signs, but even in certain places in Ontario as well, they're bilingual.
Yes.
Pressing that issue. But, what I feel is that there's a lot of people in Quebec that actually want to remove themselves. They might even join up with France and other countries. And that's the agenda that I see, that they want to pull in Ontario and the other provinces out west together with the United States to make this one continent. This is the New World Order agenda, and I think that this is part of this whole group that has brought this 9/11 inside job scenario down the throats of the American public, and they're still in the dark about it because they're too dumbed down.
Well, I'm glad you said that instead of me. Because had you not said it, I would have. And are you familiar with a document that's Banker's Manifesto of 1892?
I sort of have seen these things because of the people that I've interviewed, like Ralph Epperson. Jim Mars also wrote the rule by secrecy.
Uh-huh.
So this is something that the bankers have already put in as their agenda of what they want to take, down around the world. And when I saw Bush making a major move, what was it, last year or the year before, divvying up the ocean pie amongst these elitists,
uh-huh.
That the move is there, and it's being enacted right before the Congress. And people should actually look at who the Congress people are. Are they for America or for themselves? This is very, very serious problem that we have right now facing us because of these acts secretly brought, just like the Bankers Act of the Federal Reserve. So the fact that David Hawkins and yourself, I call you two heroes, that you're trying to bring the attention of the world to these banking families, these bankers, these corporations, because you've hit it right on the nail, who were the plotters of 9/11. And I thank you for that.
Well, we, on behalf of David Hawkins, myself, and the 700 plus members, we humbly appreciate your expression of gratitude. Neither one of us have an ego, neither David nor I, although I appear to have an ego because my picture is the one that shows up on websites. David is more, and I don't know if it's, I don't think it's a concern for his safety. I think it's more like mysterious and theater because he's a great fan of Sherlock Holmes. But he has decided that it best suits the purpose of Hawk's Cafe for him to be more mysterious and unseen, whereas my picture is probably around the globe on the internet because I've released the DVD. We have another movie coming out, and I can't tell you exactly when, not because I'm secretive, just because the final editing is ongoing at this point. But when this professional camera, professional editing, professional artist movie with only one actor, and that's me, and I'm not an actor, I'm just the guy whose sad duty it is to know some details that the rest of the world, certainly the North America needs to know what I know, but the world really does too, because I mentioned earlier that the 108 Air Force bases around the globe that could serve as a emergency landing field for an electronically commandeered airliner. And if this sounds rather bizarre, it is, but Boeing aircraft, and I don't know if this was in response to my lawsuit or not, but Boeing aircraft, about the 10th of March, and don't hold me to that date, it's within 3 or 4 days, they released a story over in London about an uninterruptible autopilot that they have just announced. And that is allegedly a benign system that would allow a airliner that's either hijacked by some bad people, or perhaps if you like to believe old airline movies, if both pilots had the fish and then they were dead, and I'm not making this up, they absolutely have the technology to electronically take control of Boeing airliners now. I find it interesting that Boeing didn't release that information until about 2 weeks after my lawsuit was filed, because the patent on that technology is dated 2003. The release of the technology to the public was 2007. And it's my opinion, and my opinion only, that that technology actually existed a long time before 2003. And I believe, once again, it brings us back to the QRS-11 gyro chip, which was known to be installed in Boeing airliners. And this is not subject to review by anyone. Boeing has admitted they installed these things. They paid a $615 million fine to the U.S. Department of Justice in 2006 regarding not only the QRS-11, but some other import-export anomalies and some suggestions of corrupt business practices. But half the world rides on Boeing airplanes, and the other half rides on Airbus equipment. And so this is clearly not just a North American issue. This is a issue which has worldwide implications, and we need to get some worldwide attention on this and get it resolved. And I honestly believe that if enough people started asking questions about the QRS-11 and their installation on Boeing aircraft, I think this could literally be resolved in 72 hours, because every time an airplane flies in this country, it's inspected by, and your country as well, and Western Europe and most of the world. The airplanes are inspected inside and out by the crew members and also mechanics. And this part, the QRS-11, either myself or David Hawkins can send you an email photo of it. It's a small piece. It's about an inch by 2 inches. But we know where it would be installed. So any airline mechanic anywhere in the world, given this picture, could go right to the piece of hardware that it's attached to and locate it. I guess if you want to be an optimist like I am, if Boeing aircraft got behind the resolution of this QRS-11 problem, they would have electronic tracks for where these airplanes have been, and perhaps they would know where the QRSs, the QRS-11s that were not installed by Boeing, and by the way, many, many were installed by Boeing, but I believe that those installations were only on Boeing 737 models destined for China. And the significance of that, I don't know, and I really don't care, but that is the fact. The airplanes that were done by Boeing with the QRS-11, according to the DOJ complaint, and in keeping with the $615 million payment by Boeing in favor of DOJ, those were 737s going to China. I'm not the FBI, I'm not the CIA, and I'm not the Canadian Mounted Police, but my question is, if David Hawkins and I can find these facts in public domain articles and this military exercise that I'm staring at still, it just boggles our mind that the intelligence services of two great nations like ours haven't resolved 9/11 5.5 years later. And when the current movie, which is coming out and is advertised at Captain Sherlock.com. You can see a clip of this, I'd say very low budget, but very high quality and higher yet intelligence value movie that should be coming out. And it's just incredible to us that the vast millions, billions, or whatever, and it doesn't matter if you're talking Canadian dollars or U.S. dollars, what we've been spending money on in intelligence in North America seems not to be a good value. And David and I are sort of the household names amongst Hawks Cafe, but we've got people all over the world. In fact, today I've been online about 5 times and on the telephone once with a Jewish lady in Geneva, Switzerland. And she knows more about U.S. politics than most Americans, which brings us back to your comment about dumbing down of Americans. And that brings us back to the Banker's Manifesto of 1892. And I hope that when you put this up on your station, streaming audio, I hope that people will perhaps be able to hear clearly that link or that Google search that they should do, which is Banker's Manifesto of 1892, because that was European bankers that got together in Omaha in 1892, and I hate to use colorful language on the radio, but they effectively wanted to know how to rape the American citizens and rape the American resources in favor of global bankers, mostly in Europe at that time. And one of their strategies, they had 4 strategies, and I never can remember all 4, but you can find them on the internet. One of them was dumbing down Americans through poor public education. And I'd have to tip my hat to the global bankers. They've done a lovely job of that.
That's right. They keep the American public chugging back the old beer, watching all these sports games that are all fixed.
Yep.
And they're laughing all the way to the bank. Pardon my sarcasm, but that's what it's all about. They're reaping in the bucks. And when the greenback was brought in by Lincoln, they shot him. JFK put in the greenback for the people based on something. These guys have put out funny money, and they're taking compound interest out on the people, and they're so dumbed down, they don't realize that this is something that was long time in the planning, and taking down of America is one of their strategies, big time. So,
yep, I agree with you, and I would like to encourage any listeners of yours or people that are on the internet listening to you that are from countries other than the United States to keep in mind whether you love the United States, hate the United States, or have no opinion, if the United States military might is lost, and I think we're on a slippery slope heading that direction right now, none of us can accurately forecast what the future is in the world. And I'm not suggesting that the adventure of the American military over in Iraq is necessarily a good thing, but I think had 9/11 not happened, we probably wouldn't be there. Or conversely, 9/11 happened so that we could be there. And those statements are both way above my IQ level. I'm just saying, I see 9/11 for what it is, and if you want to, I'm going to dumb this down so a seventh grader in a poor school system with a couple of detached parents that don't care about their kids can understand this. 9/11 was simply a double Trojan horse or a double cross where a Muslim terrorist, actually Al-Qaeda terrorist, announced somehow, or their plans were uncovered, that they were communicating that they were going to do some type of an event somewhere around 9/11. And when the Canadian intelligence groups picked up on this, the plan to hijack the airplanes was actually hijacked a second time by the Francophonie, or the word that you can pronounce better than me. And they thought, well, as long as the Muslim terrorists want to get credit for hijacking, let's let them have the credit, but let's us do the real hijacking with technology. And here we go. We're back to the QRS-11 gyro chip. But once the hijackers, Mohammed Atta and his 18 helpers, once they were videotaped going through security so that they could be put at the scene of the crime, and if that wasn't putting them there closely enough, then red scarves falling out of the skies or notes left in luggage at the Boston airport or passports that fall all the way from the 1,000 feet down from the World Trade Center, and yet the passport doesn't burn up even though the entire flying object does. The evidence all points to the Muslim terrorist. However, the evidence was all coordinated, spoliated, or planted for the purpose of the people who were allowing the Muslims to take the heat for 9/11. But it's really the people that brought you the technologically advanced 9/11 second hijacking that should be held accountable in courts of justice in the United States, in Canada, and in the other countries from whence they perpetrated this attack. And this attack on America was in a large degree by Americans who are sympathetic to other governments, and to an equally large degree, if not larger, by some French-speaking Canadian corporations. And that, once again, is my opinion. So if somebody has a fatal problem with my opinion, I hope they come looking for me and not anybody else at Hawks Cafe.
Right, and you have to also look at who bought out Boeing. These corporations are all part of the Carlyle Group, so it's a massive pyramiding system for the elite few.
Right.
So this is very important what you and David have brought out, David Hawkins and yourself. I'm amazed, Field McConnell, Captain Field McConnell, that you've done this work, because this is amazing. This is where most Americans, if they're patriotic, if they want to have their country, wake up and smell the coffee, join your Hawks Cafe, and bring the information together.
Well, thank you very much. And it's not just Americans. I mean, we strongly encourage Canadians to join us. In fact, about 2 hours ago, David and I were on the telephone. And I said, surely, and this was me, and I don't mean surely like the lady's name, but I said, certainly, David, there's somebody in Canada who witnessed the takeoff of the droned flying objects prior to the attacks on 9/11. And I'm still looking at page number 35 now, or is it 30? It's 34, which shows the intended track of the intended hijacked airplane as it was going on an exercise to the U.S. Capitol. Well, it's entirely possible that the drone would have been launched either from underneath this track, which would be roughly Abbotsford, British Columbia, or this also goes fairly close to southern Quebec, and it would not have been difficult to launch an airplane in the dark at either Quebec or British Columbia and have that airplane fly unnoticed to join the ground track. And what a ground track is what, if you've seen an airline or a movie about airliners, it sometimes will show the controllers looking at a track over the ground. And it would be very, very simple. It would be child's play to have an unmanned airline-sized flying object join in formation with a legitimate flying object, and for the sake of argument, we'll use United 93. Everyone knows that United 93 was brought down in Shanksville, Pennsylvania, and that's true, and that really was the real United 93. But what most of your listeners won't have known until they hear this interview is that there would have been three airplanes up there. One would be United 93. One would be an unmanned, uncrewed, unterrorist drone of 93. And one would be a small weight Canadian CL-604, is my opinion. And you can look that up. It's a Bombardier product. But Canada owns not many, but they own a few of these electronic warfare type command and control jets that are based on the CL-604 platform, and they were witnessed not only by witnesses on the ground at Shanksville, but they many eyewitness at the time on 9/11 of 01. Eyewitnesses were talking about a small white jet with no markings, no colors, no flags, no identifying features, but it was seen by numerous people in Shanksville. And for those of you doubting Thomas's out there in Canada or the U.S., wherever you may be listening from, we do have video that came from, I believe it's Fox News, that shows a small white jet flying away from the impact area after United 175, or the drone that was claimed to be United 175, flew into the World Trade Center. And that is not subject to my eye doctor's interpretation. I can get to you, Ladybug, the video that shows this small white jet down at 1,000 feet right next to the World Trade Center at the time of impact. And to me, that's one of the two biggest smoking guns out there that are going to bring down the 9/11 fairy tale. The second one is this document I keep referring to, which is the 35-page military exercise briefing guide for the dress rehearsal of 9/11 called Amalgam Virgo.
So this is something that you can actually follow through. That's what you're going to and be sending us tomorrow, or I guess it's part. Right now you're feeding it to us so that we can give this to our listeners?
Yes. And
okay.
Yeah, I will email it to you when we get off this interview and I get to my computer. I'm going to email you a couple of documents. But this is just a little mind candy for yourself, Lady Agent Bug, and anybody else who has a great interest in the truth of 9/11. But the document I'm looking at, which is 35 pages of color, which pretty much predicts 90 days before 9/11, not only how 9/11 was going to happen, but who they were going to blame it on, because on page one, as I mentioned earlier, there's a picture of Osama bin Laden, which is trying to suggest to everybody that if the Capitol is attacked, they should look at Osama. But they'd be looking in the wrong direction, because they need to look inside the beltway of Washington, D.C., inside the banks of New York City, and inside a couple of corrupt Canada corporations, mostly in Quebec, although they're outside Quebec, too. But the center of power appears to be, to David Hawkins and myself, that it's French sympathizers in the U.S. and French speakers, perhaps, up in Quebec that brought 9/11 to us. And some people that care about me as an individual, like friends of mine in the community and church, they frequently ask me, aren't I afraid for my life, or don't I fear for my family? And the answer to that is simply no. It's way beyond time for that. It's too late. This stuff's out on the internet. We've gone on record. We've provided the documents. We've connected the dots. Maybe a seventh grader can't get it, but most 10th graders, if they've got a C average, they can see from this evidence exactly what was done and who is in a position to do it. And you don't need to be a forensic economist or a military pilot or anything else. I mean, the facts are the facts, and the facts speak for themselves, and they speak very clearly.
Now, I wanted to ask you, have David Hawkins and yourself, have you looked in the fact that there was a lot of these Brinks trucks taking out gold at the time of the 9/11? Do you see possibly that it was one of the biggest gold heists right in front of the world domain because of these trucks coming in? And all of a sudden, there's a lot of gold hoarding worldwide.
Right. Now, my expertise is pretty limited to military flying and commercial flying in the QRS-11 gyrochip, but let me ask you, as a Canadian, have you ever heard the Bank of Nova Scotia mentioned in relation to this gold?
Yes, that bank and also another Canadian bank. So that's where the money movement, the money laundering I see happened. But I think they took out the gold from not only the Twin Towers down at the bottom, but possibly because they put that yellow tape, the police tape around that area, they could have taken it out of the Bank of New York and other banks in that immediate area because no one was allowed in that area except the mob.
Okay.
And I think that is very important that people look into the actual area that was not permitted for anyone to enter, and why of all things are these demolition groups and these crews of mob allowed in this particular area to remove this the site and all of the evidence. That is highly suspicious. And you've uncovered that with David on your website there. That's astounding.
Yes, and these people are fairly brazen because they've gotten away. And when I say these people, I'm talking about the bankers behind this corruption. But they've been pretty much having their way with everybody for, 500 years.
Exactly.
I think that they might be running out of time because they really can't change history. They can't change video cameras. They can't change electronic records. And as far as the gold that was stolen on 9/11, I'm confident that David Hawkins would have talked to you about Cantor Fitzgerald, the carbon credit shredder. Carbon credit traders up in the World Trade Center? Did he bring that up?
They're working overtime, these shredders. That's what they're always doing so that people can't get to the evidence. They shred everything. And Canada is one of the biggest shredding capitals of the world.
Yeah.
These banks, if you take a look at the bankers, the different bankers and the banks, they have the shredders right beside the bank every single week on time, sometimes two or three times.
Right.
The shredding company. So, very good that you brought that up, this Cantor Fitzgerald.
Yeah, Cantor Fitzgerald, I want to put a dollar figure on that. They were the number one carbon credit traders, going into 9/11, but their offices were hit. They think they lost 600 or 700 employees, which was effectively everybody, and they also lost their business. They ceased to exist, and a household name, I'll give you two names. One of them's a household name, Al Gore, and one of them's not a household name, to most of us, but David Blood, who's an Englishman, and David Blood, the Englishman, and Al Gore, the ex-vice president, apparently benefited from the transfer of business and carbon credit trading. And the dollar figure that I understand, the Cantor Fitzgerald apparently was trading about $70 trillion. That's T with a trillion with a T. And so the value of that $70 trillion business went somewhere. And we believe it went over to the Al Gore and David Blood fund, if you will.
To their own pocketbooks. Isn't that interesting?
Well, yes, it is interesting, because if you really want to summarize 9/11, I would say three things. It was an inside job. It was motivated to decapitate America and transfer great sums of wealth to the people that are already so wealthy. It's incredible to believe they'd want more. But I think the little people in America and the little people in Canada are going to run out of enthusiasm for supporting these elitists with their incredible wealth. And I think that not little by little, but exponentially, the interest in 9/11 is growing every day. And I'm saying that because David and I, and perhaps you too, from your vantage point there, in Toronto, we're getting a whole lot more phone calls, a whole lot more emails, and a whole lot more credible information. And of those three things, it's the credible information spike that is most encouraging to us. Because as other good people come forward, that encourages even more good people who were more reluctant, to trust us with some of their information. And the more that the truth comes out, the quicker the justice will be served. And my only concern is not if justice will be served, but can we keep the Republic of the United States of America in place long enough to clean out this cesspool? And that's a question which I simply cannot answer. But by putting some pressure on people to resolve the QRS-11 gyrochip issue. That takes a terrible, terrible weapon, and when I say terrible, terrible terrorist weapon, you know, we saw the terror that was inflicted by five airplanes on 9/11. The plan for 9/11 Part 2, I allege that, and there was a plan, and I think the plan has been aborted temporarily, and I hope it gets aborted permanently, but it could have involved as many as 108 airplanes simultaneously, and that's not a pipe dream, and that's not beer or drugs or cough medicine talking. That's the truth. And I've got the document right in front of me. It shows 108 different places that these airplanes could be electronically directed towards. And that's just the tip of the iceberg, because anybody who understands the technology fully understands that these airplanes can actually be directed towards any set of coordinates. In other words, if you say 37 degrees 40 minutes north and 105 degrees and 13.6 minutes west, that's a specific location in relation to the Earth, and any airplane with 1970s technology or greater can be directed globally to a precise location, and they can be so accurate that, well, we all saw it on 9/11. Take a look at those airplanes hitting the buildings. Those were guided electronically by flight guidance systems with specific coordinates, specific altitudes, and specific airspeeds. And it was done with great precision. And that should put an end to the fairy tale that Muslim terrorists with 50 hours in a simulator did it. Because the flying I saw, and I've flown for 35 years in some fast-moving airplanes, I'm not sure if people like myself, and once again, it's not about me, but I'm 57 and I've flown jet airplanes for 35 years, I'm not convinced I could smoothly fly into the World Trade Center even if I was mentally ill enough to want to. But I assure you that, and it's not because they're Muslims, it's not because they're terrorists, it's not because they're Middle Easterners. It's because they're low-time pilots. Those pilots were trained about 50 hours in the simulator, at the most, and they were trained to fly below 10,000 feet. And below 10,000 feet, the speed limit anywhere in the U.S. is 250 knots. And according to the government, the object that hit the Pentagon was going 540. According to my eyeballs, the objects that hit the World Trade Center were going about 360 knots, which would be very close to 400 miles an hour.
I had a question regarding the Iridium satellite system and Bin Laden's family's link with Motorola, and also explain to the listeners what exactly the gyroscope does. And I want to ask, too, is our other interviewer, Eric, there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. I want to, that you would have a chance now. And if the time is allotted, comes up, if I hear that recording, then we'll take it. But you'll do the second half of the interview with Field McConnell, okay? So those two questions I have, and then Eric will take over. Eric Huffschmid is our other interviewer who will take over with asking questions of Captain McConnell.
Okay, the Iridium system is something that David is much more well-educated and informed, and he's done a vast amount of research. But what I know is they possess 66 or more satellites, and those satellites are ostensibly out there for benign purposes. But correct me if I misspeak, Lady Agent Bug, or Agent Ladybug, sorry about that. I'm not dyslexic. I'm just looking at a picture of an airplane flying across the Capitol. I may misspeak here, but I don't think so. Those Iridium Boeing satellites, I believe that they've been privatized. In other words, a lot of American citizens would take great comfort in knowing there are 66 satellites around the globe that are protecting us, but I don't believe that those satellites are publicly owned. Is that your understanding as well?
That's right. I see a major problem with companies like Bombardier or private companies set up and using flightless planes to coordinate an attack using these satellite systems that have been privately put up into space. People don't understand that this is long time in the planning, and this probably coordinated satellite system that they're trying to put this warfare scenario, but they're actually launching up these satellites to take out us any dissenters. This is what I see as their warfare. The banking's final hold, get that entire platform of the missile system in space. It's already set up in Europe and in Canada. It was not allowed in Canada for a time period because a lot of public made an outcry of it, but they secretly put it up in space anyhow. That's
okay.
Where I see a problem.
I see a couple problems. One problem I see, is, and this, I don't want you to think I'm going off down a rabbit trail now, but those satellites have allegedly been used in the pedophile or pedophilia industry, and that's something I have no experience or robust knowledge level of, but I've seen messages that suggest that there's a trade in children, which I find rather abhorrent. Secondly, another thing that I have a little bit more knowledge of is a computer can be a good thing or a bad thing. A baseball bat can be a good thing or a bad thing. These Iridium satellites can be good things or bad things. But in our ongoing U.S. military campaigns in Afghanistan and Iraq, the center of their military control is the Central Command, which has its home base down at MacDill Air Force Base in Tampa, Florida. Are you aware of that?
Yes.
Okay. Now, when the commanding general down there and his staff wants to issue some orders to the people in the field, so to speak, in Iraq, those signals are transmitted, I believe, from MacDill Air Force Base over Iridium satellites and then downlinked to the military receiving agencies over in Iraq or Afghanistan. But I'm just putting this technology suggestion out there. If those signals are going to, say, the U.S. Marine Corps, there's nothing, it's like a cell phone call or an email, there's nothing in my mind that prevents those signals from being bounced to some other people or being backdoored or being piggybacked. But this is not brand new technology. In 1991, I believe it was, and it might have been 1990, but I think 1991, there was a investigative author and reporter named Danny Casolaro, and he died prematurely, and he was involved in researching something called Promise, P-R-O-M-I-S, Promise software. And that software had two things happen to it. First of all, it was stolen from the people who invented it. Secondly, it was backdoored and then distributed. So, and my command of this is not, I'm no expert. I'm more well-rounded when it comes to airlines and military technology. But I think we can go back to 1991 and see that any available technology can and will be hijacked by whoever has the money to get it done, which brings us back to the global elitist, if you will, or I think I heard you say about an hour ago, the New World Order.
That's right.
And that is the common denominator in all these things, whether it's Iridium or the fairy tale of 9/11. It's just enslavement of the world's little people to do the will and to pay the bills for the very few world's big people.
That's right. The big people never foot the bill. They just put their feet up and laugh all the way to the bank. They've been doing this for years, and people don't get the message still that they've been had.
Well, you know, I'm not trying to declare victory prematurely, but just from where I'm sitting down here, I'm seeing a whole lot of enthusiasm just in the last week. Alex Jones of Prison Planet?
Yes.
He apparently has been on a real tear this week because he is so encouraged by all the people coming forward now who are from backgrounds that typically were not coming forward with information. And this is not me speaking. This is a quote from somebody who is telling me about Alex Jones, and I think this would be borne out by going to prisonplanet.com, but he apparently is encouraged that military and airline pilots are starting to come out of the woodwork now. And,
well, that's excellent.
Yeah, and so I guess, you know, I knew that there were a couple more than myself, but apparently the couple more is now turning into a couple hundred. But it's encouraging these people who are willing to do the hard interviews on some stuff that could cause them health problems. Because there are people who, on the other end of David Hawkins and I, the people that we are laying, or we're giving credit to a group of people for having perpetrated 9/11, and those people are some household names that would just love for David and I to cease to exist as in be dead. But unfortunately, you can kill the messenger, but you're not going to kill the message, not with the internet and not with the flurry of communications that we've been involved in the last 4 months. It's a little bit late to bring these messages back. Therefore, from a personal security perspective, it's certainly way too late for me or David to be concerned with our personal security. And frankly, neither one of us ever were anyway, because we know that if what we're working against does not get stopped, the quality of life in the United States, the Canada, and the Commonwealth, which is New Zealand, Great Britain, Australia, and India, these places, the quality of life is not going to be such that you'd want to be alive anyway. So we feel that we have been put in the position we are with the knowledge that we have for the purpose of sharing it with good, honest little people worldwide and doing everything we can, including funneling and warehousing information and bringing legal suits. We want to do everything we can to delay, frustrate, or abort whatever group you want to call this. If it's New World Order, global elitist, I know who they are, but I don't care what you call them. But we need to stop these people. And by the way, in addition to the other things they are, they're quite arrogant. And I say that because some of the global bankers have been, I think they deem themselves global guardians. Have you heard that term?
Yes, I see these, especially when you take a look at the Rothschild family. There's one who wrote a book, and even on the first page, I had to laugh because he talks about money, more money, and then again money, and it goes on. And then when they talk about each other, they put themselves on the pedestal as if they're gods.
Yeah.
Above everyone.
Yes. Well, they might be a little mistaken, because I believe there is a God above everyone, but I do not believe he is a banker.
Exactly. He has no time for banking.
No.
Everything is free, and these guys want us to give them the freedom to have this fantastic lifestyle. People don't even realize they have trillions and trillions of dollars amassed all from people's hard-earned work. We're just a human resource to them. That's what I see.
Well, I think it's the time to start educating people and stand up for, not just stand up for America and stand up for Canada, but stand up for good, honest people worldwide. And I don't want to sound like a social activist or a liberal, but, you know, a viewpoint is a viewpoint. And my viewpoint is, if we people who are not global elitist don't start understanding what's going on, then we are going to be totally victimized eternally by this stuff that is going on. It's very close to fruition. And how close is close? None of us knows. But it didn't make me feel any better to see Nancy Pelosi over in Syria last week.
Good grief. Now, Eric, are you there?
Yes.
You jump in there and ask some questions.
I was wondering about Al Gore and David Blood. You brought them up, and you know, they created this global investment management company,
yep,
which I never really looked into until you and Hawkins brought this up. But, you know, this is a weird group. They say Al Gore is the chairman, Mark Ferguson is the chief investment officer, and they're describing Mark Ferguson as just, he was an actor in Lord of the Rings. I mean, it looks like Al Gore is only there to attract people. Al Gore doesn't seem to have the ability to actually run a company. And then they got an actor. What's that? To attract people again. This is a really a strange looking company. And it says it's got people around the world in it. Do you see this as being Al Gore being just like a puppet, and behind is this group that's actually much more connected to 9/11 and this crime network?
Yes, I do. And once again, I would defer to David if he was here, because this is something he could talk for hours on. But I think, excuse me for coughing in your ear, I believe that it would be safe to say that your former Canadian Maurice Strong, is it?
That's right.
Yeah. Kyoto Mo. I think he's sort of behind this 9/11, excuse me, not 9/11, the global warming and the Kyoto and the carbon credits. And I think he's several other things, too. I think that Mr. Strong does not like the United States of America. He's a depopulationist. Correct me if I misspeak, Lady Agent Bug, or Agent Ladybug. But Mo Strong seems to be one of the names that I keep seeing as a problem, not only with politics, geopolitics, but just the world in general. Carbon credit, I think, is really smoke and mirrors, and I believe the markup on what they're delivering is 1,000%. I think when they sell something, they're making 1,000%, and what they're selling is nothing. They have no product. David could talk with authority on this, but basically, they would be selling you the right to create so much carbon dioxide. I live on a farm in Minnesota, and I've got some cows out there that are consuming carbon dioxide or exhausting it, one of the two. They're breathing in oxygen, and yeah, they're creating carbon dioxide. And I guess Al Gore and David Blood and those who share their views would love to tax me for my cows doing what cows have done since God created cows.
Well, yeah, it's just another way to raise some money. But there's so many of these mysterious institutions and think tanks. They have different names for them, you know. But we've got the same with things like Tavistock and the Claremont Institute, which David Ray Griffin belongs to. You know, he's supposedly exposing 9/11. He belongs to this mysterious Claremont Institute. And then we have the Ludwig von Mises Institute that Morgan Reynolds is a part of. I mean, so many of these people that are getting attention are belonging to these strange institutes or think tanks. And do you see a connection between all of them to the same group? Or how do you see all of these mysterious groups like Tavistock and the Stanford Research Institute and Claremont? Have you looked into any of them?
No, and you know what? David and I both have the mindset that regardless of what these other groups are doing, they don't feel confident enough about what they're doing to file lawsuits yet.
Did you hear that?
Oh, no.
1 minute remaining, so I'm going to call on another card and he'll answer that question. Hold on and I'll call back again.